Hello and welcome to an episode of Greybeards on Storage, recorded here on the V Brown Bag stage at Dell EMC World 2007 in the lovely Venetian Hotel Resort Casino and Hellhole of Las Vegas, Nevada.
I wouldn't call it a hellhole. Or is Las Vegas a hellhole?
No, Las Vegas is a hellhole.
Oh, I gotcha.
And I am your left-hand co-host, Howard Marks, and my associate...
This is Ray Lucchese, and I'm the right-hand host, I think.
And...
Oh, it's wrong. Sorry.
Oh, the other left.
The other left, he says.
Yes, we know storage, but directions we have trouble with.
Yeah, it's that coding thing, you know.
And so this has been the first real Dell EMC World after the merger. There was a small event in Austin last fall.
Yeah, which I didn't go to. Did you go to?
No, I didn't go to it either. And it was
planned
so quickly that it was mostly the Dell event with EMC added.
Right.
I, for one, am impressed with how effectively they're making the public face of the merger look.
Yeah, it looks very good. I mean, and Michael Dell talked at length early on in the first keynote about, you know, how things are coming together and how they're sort of partitioning the various market segments and that sort of stuff, which I found pretty interesting. Although I found Michael is pretty much of a ham. I mean, he was on the stage for, I think, 5 days or something like that.
Yes. Although, you know, in my personal dealings with him, Michael is an incredibly impressive gentleman.
No doubt. You know, I would have to say I haven't had any personal dealings with him.
You know, I met him at PC Magazine back in the day
You know,
probably hadn't even shaken his hand in 15 years. And then I saw him at EMC World last year and he, you know, said, "Hi, Howard."
Oh,
and I wasn't wearing my badge.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There's just a memory there that's very
impressive. I can't do that sort of stuff.
No, the people come up to me and say they're fans of the podcast, which, you know, A, I find terribly embarrassing, and B, it's kind of like, oh, right, we met 3 years ago, I have no idea what your name is now, and you're wearing a badge.
Yeah. No, I have occasional fans of the podcast come up all the time and appreciate what we're doing, and, you know, occasionally I want to take a picture with me and stuff like that. It's pretty embarrassing for me. But I enjoy the notoriety, I guess, or whatever you'd call it. So what's new here at Dell EMC World these days?
Well, I just came out of a meeting with an outfit that I've seen at EMC World a couple of times and didn't know what they did, Data Adobe.
What is Data Adobe?
D-A-T-A-D-O-B-I.
Okay.
They're a file migration tool.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, like Robocopy, they'll walk the file system and copy the files, but unlike Robocopy, they'll do that iteratively because, you know,
through the directory string.
You say, I'm going to move the data from this FAS to that Unity.
Oh, okay.
And there's 10 million files and 4,000 of them are locked. And, you know, the user ID you're running under doesn't have permission to some of them.
Yeah.
And so they'll make a pass and then give you a report and you can fix it and they'll only look at those files again. And so it's really... making that forklift upgrade much easier.
Right.
You know, I like coming to these events just so I can see those little guys.
Yeah, there are a lot of actually Dell partners or EMC partners that are in the area and such, which is kind of interesting. I only really have been on the solution floor for that tour they had yesterday morning.
Which didn't actually show much other than
Dell EMC, really.
Well, I have to ding the organizing folks just a little on that. The idea of serving the press and analyst and influencer group breakfast on the show floor, but not telling anyone but Dell employees that they should be in their booths to talk to us,
I think
was a mistake.
Yeah,
you know, it would be much more effective
if
everybody was there.
Yeah, I imagine I'm not sure we'd have enough time to do everything that we'd want to. Although you and I kind of just randomly go through the process of the show floor. Versus the tour, which was a different option.
Yeah,
and
speaking of the Solutions Exchange or the show floor, there seemed to be less third parties than I've been used to from EMC World in the past. Now, you know, that part of that's an organizational thing. Interestingly, there's a wider diversity of third parties because we have, you know, our friends from Datrium.
Right, Datrium is here. I saw Craig.
Typically at EMC World would have been, well, you can't exhibit, you're storage guys.
Yeah.
But they're Dell partners.
Yep.
And so we've talked several times about how we would rather see independent events with a broader range of exhibitors.
It's hard for a vendor like these guys to support that sort of thing. I mean, yeah. But I understand. Yeah, obviously VMware is the prime example of, you see a lot of different vendors at VMworld events and that sort of stuff.
Right.
Which is hard to see at these more specific vendor events.
In terms of the actual Dell EMC product announcements.
A lot of interesting stuff. I mean,
a lot of evolutionary stuff.
Sure.
I'm a little frustrated about the discussion of 14G servers.
Now, why is that, Howard?
Because it's pre-announced. Because, you know, we're geeks.
This is not going to be out for another couple of months.
Well, it's not. I don't mind the
pre-announced.
I don't mind talk to me in May about products you're going to release in July or August.
Okay.
I mind make a big deal about the fact you're coming out with a new group of servers in July and August, but because Intel hasn't released the details of what those Xeons are, all you can say is they're going to be great. And you can't really talk about, well, you know, instead of having four NVMe U.2 slots, they'll now have 25.
Yeah, they didn't mention the fact that it was like 19x more NVMe slots and stuff
right,
like that.
But,
so they've got some of that information there.
But I, you know,
it's an Intel thing. It's not. You can't blame Dell EMC for Intel.
I blame Dell EMC for making the announcement this early.
Ah, I see.
You know, it's just a tease, and yeah. I'm a little bit put out by the teasing aspect of it.
I imagine it's an Intel timing thing as much as anything.
Of course.
Yeah. You know,
and
maybe
this
when
is,
they first started this thing and had intended to release the 14G announcement, it was earlier in the. You know.
I hadn't considered that Intel may have slipped the schedule.
Not that they. I have no idea. Right?
No. It's certainly possible.
A possibility.
Yeah. But. You know, I'm in the middle of acquiring new servers for the lab, and
you want the 14G servers.
Well,
if
now
they're available. Yeah.
Now I'm at the I want the 14G servers, and I don't know if I can wait because you know, my current servers aren't up to the tier zero stuff.
Right.
And
you certainly want tier zero for your lab because you're going to be doing a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, and so you know, in terms of Dell EMC, they've kind of abandoned Tier Zero temporarily.
For the moment, until it gets a little bit more
well, DSSD was kind of the classic example
of what
happens if you start early, and the only way to solve the problem that early is hardware, but hardware takes
expense.
So long
that
a software solution beats you, or comes to market at the same time, cheaper.
I'm kind of a hardware guy, you know. I like the hardware engineering side of things, and I thought DSSD was an interesting product, but it had a lot of hardware, and I think the challenge there is you've got, like you say, there's a certain road race here between a software-only solution and a hardware solution, and you've got, if you're going to play the hardware game, you've got to continue to keep beyond that software-only solution.
A hardware-based solution has to have a substantial advantage.
Oh yeah, 10x plus, right?
The one thing they did tell us about the 14G servers that I'm really excited about is NVDIMM support, because NVDIMMs are the critical difference between the storage appliances and software-defined storage. Because if you're running vSAN, a write has to get written to
an SSD.
Flash.
Yeah.
So write latency is the latency of the flash.
Right.
But if they have NVDIMMs and if they have RDMA NICs,
right,
then a write can come into one node in the vSAN. That node via RDMA can write not only into its NVDIMM, but into a partner's NVDIMM.
At NVDIMM type of latency.
At NVDIMM and RDMA latencies.
Yeah,
and so now we're talking about 150, 300 microseconds of write latency in vSAN. Now, I'm not predicting, you know, I'm predicting, but I don't have any knowledge that that's coming, but it opens the door for that.
Yeah.
You know, HPE now offers NVDIMMs on their latest generation of servers. If that becomes a standard feature
anymore,
then the software guys
will catch up,
can start taking advantage of it and saying, order the NVDIMM, and your write performance will be five times better.
Yeah,
and that,
I think the critical question for these guys and a lot of the players is, I mean, the software-defined storage is becoming more and more prevalent in the customer environments and getting more and more powerful with all flash, and the capabilities are starting to become more and more equivalent almost to what's available in a standalone storage appliance. Why would you want a standalone storage appliance anymore? That's, you know, I think if you have multiple operating system hypervisor environment, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, there's a couple of reasons. If you're not entirely virtualized.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. Oh, sir. Sure.
And there are good reasons
not to be entirely
not virtual. Well, to not even if we're talking about an all x86 environment.
Right.
You know,
right.
Leaving aside the, and we have that one HPUX or Oracle on Sunbox.
Right.
You may have the SQL Server that requires 256 gig of memory and 20 cores.
Yeah, and it wants it all.
And you could virtualize it, but it would take up the whole host and
why?
It wouldn't buy you anything.
Right.
But the other thing is, depending on which HCI solution you're looking at, the cost may not be as low as you think. Some of the more expensive HCI solutions can, in fact, cost more as hybrids than a converged solution with an all-flash array. And lastly, while HCI simplifies operations in many ways, it complicates them in other ways.
How so?
Well, when we brought VMware into the data center, there was the efficiency play. It's, I can get rid of these 40 little servers running little tasks and run them as 40 VMs and get the utilization and the space and all of that.
Right.
And in fact, when I was in New Jersey, my lab was in a client's data center where they had designed the data center, and then when they moved in, they virtualized so that they had three times the space they needed.
They needed, so they had the space.
So I got to camp there so that when they needed tech support, they could just poke their head in my office.
That was good.
It was a good deal for a while.
Yeah, for both of you, I imagine, yeah.
But when we virtualized with external storage, all of a sudden the server became stateless. If I need to do a firmware upgrade, I put it in maintenance mode. I run vMotion.
Get all that stuff off of it.
All that stuff gets off of it. I can do a memory upgrade. I can do a firmware upgrade. I can maintain
pretty
the hardware
much whatever you want.
In the middle of the day without working nights and weekends.
It was stateless. Yeah.
And now when
with
I add storage back,
a little different game.
It's not stateless anymore. And I either have to take that node out of the cluster and reduce my cluster's resiliency while I'm doing maintenance, or I have to migrate all the data off, which generates a huge amount of network traffic and takes hours.
Right.
And even if I said, okay, I'm gonna put this in maintenance mode, and I'm going to program my vSAN so that it doesn't start an auto rebuild for the first hour. When that node comes back, there's a burst of network and I/O and
to get it up to
storage
date.
Traffic to bring it up to date.
But you can add storage to something like vSAN without having to take the node out. I mean, it depends on what you have to do, right?
It depends what you have to do. If you have
memory
to do
is a different game.
Yeah, if you have to add memory, if you have to add a PCIe card, you know, the slots in servers today are hot swap PCIe in general.
But
I don't know anyone who has the nerve to actually do that. Frequently, you have to pull the riser out, so it's just like not
easily.
You know, it's technically hot swap, but nobody hot swaps it.
I was talking to the Unity guys out there, and they were able to. I mean, they effectively the same controller cabinet, you know, and packaging goes across their whole line, and you can actually just hot swap the control units.
Right. Well, I mean, much like the flash, the Pure Flash Array.
Right.
That they built a cabinet that takes two x86 servers in canisters.
Yes.
And that can
That's
be.
That's what they have. Yeah.
And that can be six node x86 servers for the low end and 22 core x86 servers
for the high end. With more memory and all
and,
that stuff.
And that means that you can update live.
Yeah.
You know, tell it to fail everything over to cert to controller A, pull controller B out, put the new bigger one in, fail
and
everything
opposite.
Back. And this ties into the changes that we're seeing in the pricing and upgrade model, where it used to be if you bought a CX300 and you outgrew it and you needed a CX500. You had to buy a whole new Clarion.
Right.
You might be able to move the shelves over.
If you're,
But you also had
well.
But you also had to rebuy all the options.
Right.
Snapshots cost money, and replication cost money, and your old server, your old system's gone. Your new system needs them all.
Yeah.
And it really was a forklift upgrade. And if we look at what's going on in the market in general, we're seeing, oh, well, you can upgrade those controllers and just pay the difference in cost from some vendors.
Right.
And, I mean, actually, the most interesting thing Dell EMC announced, to my point of view, is a new consumption model.
The CloudFlex model, yeah.
Where you can buy a VX rack and pay by the month with a 12-month commitment,
right,
which is not the full list price over those 12 months.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then the price goes down for the next 12 months. But if in month 14 the project you bought it for is over,
you can
just return it and stop paying. So it's not quite an elastic cloud consumption model,
but it's not
the forklift upgrade and rebuy all of the options
and
again
the
model
that
we had 10 years ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that I think is really the advantage that Dell EMC and HPE and to a lesser extent IBM
can all support those sorts of things, yeah.
Because that's financial engineering. Like these big financially stable companies can borrow money at, say, prime minus one.
Yeah, yeah.
And they can build into this.
Unlike us, which is prime plus seven or something
right.
like that.
Yeah. Well, or if you're a startup, you really can't borrow money.
At all, yeah.
And you know, you have your capital and you have to pay sales guys with capital.
Right.
So
you have to really be parsimonious with
the And so the big guys can do this financial engineering, borrow money really cheap, build an imputed interest rate into the financing of getting the system.
Right.
That's, you know, we went from prime minus one to prime plus one, but of course we all know there's a little bit less discount flexibility if you're using the special financing.
Yeah.
And so they'll make their money
back off of that
on the finance, you know,
having
the finance side makes them more flexible.
Yeah.
You know, much as I love the new tech from startups,
right?
This becomes a really good
reason to play
with the billion-dollar boys.
Right. Oh, the other thing, I was talking to a customer today. I mean, there's an advantage with the big guys. I mean, because they've got effectively a sunk install base. So this customer was looking at a new startup, which would have been like a, you know, maybe $250,000 play, but their old equipment is $4 or $5 million. So their support leverage is significantly different too.
Right.
Yeah.
So
that's interesting.
Yeah.
You know, so the VMAX stuff, they came out with, they refreshed the VMAX,
They refreshed practically everything.
Did they refresh data domain? So they did an IDPA thing, right?
They did some minor refreshes on data domain, but I mean, I actually am not paying much attention to data domain anymore.
Yeah.
I think the day of data domain has passed because the way we make backups changed. Data domain was designed for weekly, full, daily, incremental.
Right.
And that produces, and a month's retention.
Yeah.
So that means there's at least four duplicates because we made
every time,
backups within that month.
Yeah.
But the whole weekly, full, daily, incremental process was based around tape.
Right.
That if you had a monthly full, if you ever had to do a full restore, you had to find 31 tapes and mount them, and that was more work than anybody was willing to do.
So you had the full and a couple of daily backups, and that was it. Yeah,
and
so
now we're backing up to disk.
Right.
And because we've
been backing up to disk for a long time, though.
No,
yeah.
but the backup soft, for the first 5 years of backing up to disk,
it was really tape. It was virtually tape.
It created a file that emulated a tape.
Yeah.
You know, even if we're not talking about virtual tape libraries.
I know.
But today, every backup application does incremental forever. If you're backing up vSphere, and a lot of the data we're backing up comes from vSphere, the incrementals are change block tracking incrementals,
so even better,
not whole file incrementals.
Right.
And so that we're creating 10 duplicates and we bought a data domain to decreate them as we backed it up.
Right.
Well, now we're creating two duplicates.
Maybe, yeah.
And
so
the
advantages
cost
aren't significant. Yeah.
Of a data domain is roughly 8 to 10 times the cost of an ECS.
Mm-hmm.
So if I tell my backup software, back up to the object store, I could actually save money. Yeah. That brings the object store into my data center, so my application developers have an object store. I see it as a good foot in the door.
Right, right.
And when we start talking about very long retention, it just makes much more sense.
Yeah. So what they've done, they've got the DD virtual edition and stuff like that. You can run that in the cloud now if you want.
And that makes a lot of sense because the restrictions of public cloud storage and getting around it. I've started thinking that, you know, we talked about storage virtualization my career at least twice.
At least. Oh, God, I've been four or five times storage virtualization.
Well, you've been a storage guy longer than I have. Yeah. You know, I used to be a network guy, don't tell anybody.
All right.
But it never got any traction because...
Different environments. Traction was
USP,
good.
USP, VSP.
Yeah.
And IBM.
Right.
But that's pretty much it. You know, Falcon Store never really got any traction. You know, EMC had like three solutions over the year. None of them got any traction.
Yeah.
And much of that's because it was, let me aggregate five smart arrays.
Right.
And in EC2. EBS is dirt stupid.
Yeah.
And it might be that the solutions like Falcon Store or like Data Domain as a VM, as an EC2 instance,
would have used,
make sense in the public cloud because the backends are so stupid, I have to layer on
some
snapshots and other services.
Yeah.
And that's what the...
You think there's a VMAX virtual edition in our future?
Well, I know there's a VNX, there's a Unity
VE. That's true.
I don't know what the Dell EMC position on using it in production is. Those things used to be demonstrations and labs.
Yeah, you have limited terabytes and stuff.
But
like
I don't think we'll see a VMAX virtual
edition.
Because the secret sauce, the reason you buy a VMAX is RAS.
Yeah.
Right. I don't buy a VMAX because I like the way VMAXs do snapshots. I buy a VMAX because that thing runs all
forever.
The time.
Yeah. Bulletproof.
And because it supports my mainframe.
Yeah.
So I don't see that feature set running as, it would have to be eight VMs tightly coupled
to provide that level
of RAS, and I don't see that happening.
Interesting.
Curiously,
at one level, I think from a software perspective, you could do it. It's just a question of whether you want to put that effort in. And you're running on EC2 anyways, which can, you know, probably has worse reliability than the VMAX.
Right. No. And as my friend Laz Vakarides, who works closely with public cloud guys, says, Amazon occasionally likes to shoot things in the head.
And
your EC2 instance just blows up. If it was a cloud-native app, that's fine.
Yeah.
If it wasn't a cloud-native NAP, it reboots.
Yeah.
But you don't want storage systems being shot in the head. So I don't see that happening. But you know, talking about that VMAX RAS, I was talking to one customer who's buying Nutanix. You know, and of course, this being Dell EMC world, they're buying the Dell XC version.
Nutanix, yes.
And they're using it for applications that they're taking off the VMAX.
Really?
But because at some point in time, some committee decided that application required higher resiliency than a Clarion could provide.
Okay, that's why they got it on VMAX in the first place.
And they couldn't buy a Unity because that would mean having to reassess that decision.
Right.
But if they move it to HCI, they just have to say, this is resilient enough. So the application that never needed to be on the VMAX in the first place can move to HCI, but can't move to Unity. It's just another proof point that politics trumps technology.
Yeah. Politics matters a lot.
And so, you know, why people buy things, you have to dig into multiple layers of that.
Yeah, no, I understand.
But the, you know, we got Unity updates, we got Extreme IO updates.
Right.
I'm very happy about some of the Extreme IO updates.
Really? They're faster, they're better efficiency, they're denser.
And they're actually more scale out.
than there were before?
There were in the original Extreme IO, which is now X1,
yeah.
A bit of a retronym, you could only have an even number of bricks. You could have 2 bricks, you could have 4 bricks, you could have 6 bricks, you could or 8 bricks,
you
could not have
like
3, 5, or 7.
Yeah.
And I frequently describe that as a scale-out architecture, but not a scale-out implementation. Yeah, it was very, some of those, so they've addressed those things. But the big advantage is, you know, we talked about NVDIMMs.
Right.
Well, they added NVRAM. Now, in this case, it's a PCIe NVRAM card.
Right, right.
But write latency.
For metadata.
It's primarily for the write buffer.
Really? I was told it was like for a metadata, you know, backup in case of a power failure.
But they are now ACKing when
at the time
it's in
it gets
the NVRAM in both controllers in the brick. And of course, the controllers are InfiniBand connected.
Right.
So it is really that RDMA we talked about
with
vSAN.
Speed, yeah.
And so now they can have not just read latencies well under a millisecond, but write latencies under a millisecond.
They did improve the write latency considerably. Yeah.
And over the past 5 or 6 years, the read-write mix has shifted more towards the write.
Do you think it's more than 50-50?
No, I don't think it's more than 50-50. I think it's, you know,
it used to be 80-20 kind of.
Yeah, I think it went from 70-30 to 60-40.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, if you look at VDI specifically, VDI is 60-40 the other way.
Yeah.
VDI is more write intensive than it is read intensive.
Right.
And so, you know, it becomes a better platform for those write intensive applications and just for the, I haven't figured out whether my application is write intensive or not.
That's interesting.
So it's, you know, we haven't seen the story play out. These big mergers take a while. They came out with a new version and update of the SC Compellent series.
Saw that.
Which, you know,
haven't really talked to those guys, but more processors and better performance kind of thing. But it's a low-end solution, right?
Well, frankly, Compellent was always software-defined storage. You know, even the original Compellent was a pair of servers with NVRAM cards added and shelves.
Smart software.
And shelves of disk and smart software.
Yeah, yeah.
So it fits really well when Dell acquired them. The positioning's changed several times. And I think basically, and you know, I heard this from a former Compellent executive who shall remain nameless, that both lines have sufficient revenue to justify the R&D.
Okay.
And you know, we frequently think about there's a merger and there's two mid-range disk arrays, and the SC, why do you need both? And the answer is they're different
market.
Customers.
Yeah,
it's
different,
not even big, small, direct attach.
Right, right.
It's just they're different customers.
Yeah.
And Compellent always had the happiest customers I ever met.
Really?
That, you know, people loved their Compellents. And part of that was the company provided good service. Part of that was while they were competing with Clarion, they didn't make you rebuy the software. You could, because the controllers were just servers.
Right, right.
When new controllers came out, you just bought new controllers.
Server. Yeah, yeah.
And the array
to
which you bought the options was still the same array, even if you replaced, like George Washington's axe, the handle and the head.
Right.
It still occupied the same space and had the same software licenses. Yeah. So
we used to call that mind melding of storage between two different controllers and stuff like that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. In this case, is licensing. Though.
They have, you know, they have killed some of the Dell storage products off.
Right.
You know, they're frankly, and I don't blame them at all for killing off things like Fluid File System.
Right.
You know, they have Unity and they have Isilon.
Isilon now. Why would they need that?
And Fluid File System fit kind of halfway in between, and there's just no reason to spend that R&D for the number of customers they had for Fluid File System.
Right, right.
But the product rationalization has been less vicious than I expected. They borrowed a lot of money and everybody expected there to be huge
cost cutting. There's been some obviously, but not. And it will continue to roll out, no doubt, over time as they rationalize what's going on.
And, you know, end products just reach the end of their natural life, which, you know, pretty much is what happened to Equalogic.
Yeah.
It was just the Equalogic was a great solution.
Right.
But today, I think 90% of the customers would be better served by vSAN than by Equalogic.
Right, right.
And so why have it?
And Michael Dell mentioned a couple of times a $4.5 billion of R&D spend per year, which is pretty good. And certainly better than what EMC was doing originally. And, you know, the combined group would have done if they, you know, if they'd separated and stuff like that. So,
do you read that as an increase in R&D from the
I say it's on plan.
Yeah.
You know, what's not on plan, now, EMC was very aggressive from an acquisition perspective.
Yes.
And they're certainly not looking as much to do that, considering where they're at today. They just made the biggest acquisition in
right.
god-awful
well, I mean,
history.
Right. You know, to some extent, if you know, you just had Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah.
And, you know, you
why
don't
you
want
to go
any
out
snacks.
To dinner. Yeah.
It, you know, I got to digest this.
Yeah, so
before
that's
we
the
think
challenge
about the
for
next
them.
One.
I mean, but there's a lot, and we both know there's a lot of startups out there with interesting technology that could fit very well in a number of different solutions in these products.
Speaking of which, did you see Micron's announcement last week?
No, I didn't. What happened to Micron?
So Micron is OEMing Excelero's software.
Oh yeah, I did see that. The system, and, yeah, the new SSD controller.
And well, you know, when Micron hired Darren Thomas,
you knew
and,
he was going to do something.
And that
yeah.
group, I said publicly that you don't hire the guy who used to run Dell Storage to sell SSDs.
Right.
That there was a storage. There was something upstack. Coming down the road,
yeah,
and it seems this is the first one
first
of those
shoe of that stuff, yeah.
Where you know they are packaging a server, and packing it full of U.2 NVMe
right.
Micron drives
right.
with Excelero software, which we've discussed
at
infinitum on
the various
podcast.
Versions of the podcast and blog posts. I might add,
it's very impressive stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And so now they've got a tier zero kind of alternative to Western Digital SanDisk's InfiniFlash,
which
is more a bulk flash
solution.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, great. You know, kudos to our friends at Excelero for pulling that off.
Yeah, it's a great, and I think it's a great solution. It looked like, you know, they had a very smart team pulling that together.
Yeah.
And
the question is going to be, when they add data services
and how that
how big an impact that has on performance.
Right.
Because you know the first NVMe based shared array is now out.
Yeah.
You know, it's not NVMe over fabric yet. It's still ice guzz or your fiber channel.
Right, right.
But they're going to do that.
Yeah.
And when you know the mainstream storage vendors with
start
mainstream
playing in that
services
game.
Can get their latencies down, how much of a market is there left for really fast?
The VMAX guys claim 350 microsecond read latencies as well. I mean, this is pretty serious stuff, especially for not NVMe. I mean, standard SAS, SATA, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we have, there's
lots of
lies,
there.
There's damn lies, there's statistics.
No.
And here,
please,
and here
forward.
I'm, and I'm not really, you know, saying they're lying, but I am saying that you know, you can't give me one number. There's seven numbers I have to
see.
Oh,
at least.
How deep was the queue? How big was the I.O.?
How big
was the data set? Was it doing anything else? How many channels did it cross?
So
was that a,
even if there was one I.O. operation, two of VMAX all by itself, and it came back in 350 microseconds, that's friggin' impressive.
It's impressive if it's a read out of the RAM cache.
It's incredibly impressive if it was a read off of an SSD. Yes.
And you know, I can be impressed or I can be very impressed.
Yeah, okay.
And sometimes I would like to know
which.
Yeah. So
I guess. They did mention 6.7 million random read hits.
Yeah, but I didn't see where it was 6 million random hits at 350 milliseconds.
No,
the numbers seem to have... Those microseconds.
So it's two separate numbers.
Right.
All right. But yeah, I understand that. But you know, if I look at like least recent, you know, LRT from SPC1, it's like 10% at best. It is read hits and stuff like that. Yeah. So 250 microseconds is an impressive number, even if it was a read hit.
Yes. And the really interesting thing is, you know, we're just at the beginning of flash is normal.
Yeah. Yeah, God.
And that means now application structures can change.
I talked to these guys and said, you still sell hybrid? Well, we do, but it's VMAX 3, and it's really there for customers that are making a transition over time, and you know, and sooner or later they'll all be on flash.
Yeah, and
whoa,
you know, the
that's pretty impressive.
If it were, I think that the current flash shortage is going to slow that transition down about a quarter.
Yeah.
But this time next year, I would expect primary storage at 50,000 an array and up. You know, leave out the SMB world.
Right, right. Would
be be 85 or 90% all flash.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
There are good reasons to do hybrids in the SMB world because you have nobody to manage anything and you only have one storage system.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, if we're talking about people who have data centers and have multiple storage systems and maybe an object store, then, you know, 90% of those primary storage systems next year should be all flash.
Yeah.
And about this time next year is when I expect the
octane guys stuff.
Well, no, it's when I expect the rate of the cost of flash to return to the 30% compound annual decrease rate.
Right, right.
That we're in a shortage now, and prices are actually rising, and there are delivery problems.
Right.
But there are fabs under construction, and the transition from 2D to 3D
is occurring across the base.
Has been going slower, and yields haven't been as good as they're supposed to be.
Right.
But the transition from 32 layer to 64 layer seems to be smoother than the transition layer from 2D to 3D.
You think Micron will move beyond Tier Zero?
I don't think so. Well,
I mean, it's an iffy question.
Them,
you know, I mean, they're obviously a drive OEM for lots of these customers, right?
I don't see them moving past all flash.
Oh yeah, and they will never. Yeah, why would they? Yeah,
and I think that the market, because of consolidation, has changed so dramatically that fear of competing with your customers isn't what it used to be. And I remember, you know, our friend Steve Sokola,
right,
you know, designed ICE at Seagate,
right,
and then Seagate
spun it off because they didn't want to compete.
Zyotech,
yeah,
because they didn't want to compete with their customers,
right.
But back then there were 7 hard drive vendors, and if EMC having a disk array annoyed EMC, EMC could
go
buy
out to
Fujitsu,
five other guys, Toshiba, or whatever.
Or Samsung disk drives. Today in the disk drive business, there's 2.5 vendors. In the flash business, there's really 4.
Yeah.
Depending on how you talk about the Western Digital Toshiba
thing,
joint venture, that's 1 or 2.
Right.
But the Intel Micron
is 1.
Joint venture is 1.
Yeah.
SK Hynix is 1.
Samsung
is the 40% of the market all by themselves.
Yeah.
And so if you're a Micron, you know, you have to worry less about whether you're going to annoy your customers because they've got fewer places to go.
Yeah, at best, I mean, I see it being a gradual transition beyond Tier Zero if they even decide to go down that route.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, they want performance, and that says less and less data services, really.
Right, yeah.
At our level, yeah.
Yeah, there's
unless there's some magic sauce we haven't figured out yet.
It,
and obviously, people working on that, and I'm sure that we'll see that over time. Gosh. So what about Isilon? So Isilon came out with an all-flash version of their solution, also denser. And they mentioned the fact that it was both compute scalable or storage scalable, independent or together.
Yeah,
so
you
could run VMs on Isilon controllers? Or
I don't think you can run VMs on Isilon controllers, but you know they did move from what was essentially a server.
Right, right.
To much more a 4 server in canisters.
Right, kind of solution.
Solution, which gave them greater flexibility, and they added a great big JBOD because sometimes you just have a lot of data and you don't have a lot of I/O.
Yeah, yeah.
So they, and you know, and they've improved their small file I/O.
Right.
That, you know, Isilon was originally like, you know, most of the scale out systems of
the HPC
era.
Kind of guys.
Well, it was
lots
HPC and oil and gas.
Yeah.
I'm big reads, big writes, not 4K,
right.
not small files.
Not user level.
And they're making it, you know, and so today's Isilon is much better for the things you would have used Celera or an FAS for
than
strictly what it was before.
So speaking of Unity, really, they increased their file size from, file system size from 64 terabytes to 256, I think. And before that, it was like 16. So within the last year, they've kind of multiplied by a factor of 16, I guess.
Yeah.
So it's pretty impressive.
And, you know, people just have more and more data.
It, right.
You know, it's, I remember since I've been a storage guy, when I was at SNW, the vendors claiming they had a petabyte customer.
Right. Was pretty impressive. You know,
which was impressive. I mean, this is
nowadays, you can't hit a guy out there who doesn't have at least a petabyte and a half.
Well, no, now they're talking about petabytes in a rack.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's not a,
effective, quote unquote.
Yeah, it's not a petabyte customer.
Right.
It's a petabyte in a rack. And this customer has a row of 20 of those racks.
Yeah.
So, you know, the quantity of data we're dealing with has just grown immensely.
Right.
Well,
right.
I think we've babbled on pretty much long enough.
I think it's good enough.
So,
and appreciate the time here with the V. Brabrand Group. And
yes. So from here at beautiful Venetian Hotel Casino Resort and Hellhole.
In front of the hot lights, mind you.
Yes. We are at the V. Brown Bag stage making our contribution to community. Once again, this has been Graybeards on Storage. I'm Howard Marks. Goodbye,
Ray. I'm Ray Lucchese. Goodbye, Howard.